is a nest caption.
I had to you about the SIM card from DNB. That's what you meant.
No, I said to you that I got the ID number and I went to...
How are you?
Oh, project is a project, as you might know. Ups and downs, you know.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
Where is Bita?
She's coming.
She's coming.
Yeah. Did you receive the handout? Did you see the slides?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how informative they are, but
yeah,
you can take a look at them and if you have any.
Yeah. Hey. Hey, Peter. How are you? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Is this too high for you?
I think so, yeah. Oh, okay.
Oi, no, I'm not tired. Like that?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay. So you can just press here, and then you can adjust according to your
height. I think it's good now.
That you want.
So I'm not quite sure how. Oh, this one.
So that is indicating that this is used.
Okay.
Then the microphone is on. Never still have a
call. It's working.
Yeah.
Yes, it's there. Do we have online audience? Like, is there anyone?
I'm not sure whether there is still one student who has an injury. Could be, but there is no Zoom, so I'm streaming here.
Okay. Yeah.
And So then if she or he needs to ask something, then I receive an email. But I doubt that somebody is... Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
As planned, we have a marathon week this week in terms of lectures. So there are five different lectures. This you're number two, so we started yesterday.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah. Okay.
I'm happy to introduce Ereste. I don't know where you have met the first
I have cohort. Met some of them, of course, but yeah, yes. But not all of them. But it's my pleasure actually to be here today.
Yes.
And thank you, Peter, for inviting me.
And you are our expert in terms of texture.
Yeah, I don't call myself expert, but
fortification. So I'm very happy to have your lecture again. So if you want to start with introducing yourself and
okay.
What research you are doing, and then we dig into the lecture.
Okay, sure.
Thanks.
My pleasure. Okay, hello everyone. It's my pleasure to be here today. I am Ferishte, and I'm a postdoc at in color lab. I've been actually working on different projects, different disciplines. So since I came here, my main focus has been on texture, perception especially. And as my postdoc project, I'm working on basically in computer graphics discipline, I'm working on rendering digital faces. But I'm here today to talk about texture and introduce texture a little bit. So it's a kind of a very introductory talk. Can you hear me properly? Or okay, nice. So I hope I can give you some, you know, insights about texture in, you know, and how we perceive texture and how we can possibly measure texture. Okay, let's get started. So, as I said, this is a very brief introduction. We cannot go into depth, but I will try my level best today to kind of cover everything that I know about texture. So I will talk a little bit about appearance, because texture is an appearance attribute. So we need to know appearance first. And then we will introduce texture. And then I will talk about my experience and the experiments that I have done here in Color Lab in order to understand how humans perceive texture and if there is any way to quantify that. So, appearance. What is appearance? Appearance, according to this definition by ASTM, appearance is the visual sensation through which an object is perceived to have size, shape, color, gloss, translucency, and texture. So texture is one of these appearance attributes, probably the most complicated one. In this definition, we have two terms which it's better to kind of clarify the difference between them. One is sensation, and the other one is perception. So what is sensation? Sensation is basically the process of sensing stimuli with our sense organs. Our eyes, we see things. Our ears, we hear things. Our nose, we smell things. This is simply called sensation. But what makes things complicated is actually the process by which our brain interprets and analyzes those sensual information, actually. And where this is where things get a little bit complicated, because we don't know clearly how our brain works on this information from the environment. So we are trying to understand how our brain, and together with our visual system, actually understands texture. So let me give you some, you know, examples of application of texture in different disciplines first. because it's very interesting, because texture is a versatile word. In food science, we have the concept of texture. And it means that basically how we feel when we take a bite on a food, you know, thing. For example, if you take a bite on an apple, you would like to feel the firmness and kind of crispiness and crunchiness of that apple. This is the texture of that apple. But if you take a bite on a mango, probably what you feel is softness, you know, and kind of juiciness. And this is how you would like your mango be. So this is basically the difference between the texture of an apple and a mango. In geology, and in terms of, you know, defining different ingredients of soil, they have the term texture, the texture of the soil, and it depends on the size of these different, you know, ingredients, like clays, sand, gravels, and everything, which exist in the soil. In surface coatings, we have the term texture. Two types of texture actually are identified in surface coating applications, especially in automotive industry. They have physical texture, which they call actually orange peel, and basically it's something that they don't want. It's an defect of application of coating on the automobile. And they have optical texture, something that if you touch the surface of a automotive paint, you won't be able to touch it, but you would see it. And it's because of the presence of metallic, you know, and special effect pigments in the coating. In their own terms, they would call them glint impression and diffuse coarseness. In image processing, which most of us probably are interested in, we have image texture. Basically, every possible non-uniformity that you would see in an image, it could be texture. So they define image texture as special arrangement of color or intensities within an image, which basically is seen or perceived as visual non-uniformity. And this is the main concern of us probably today. We are very close to this discipline in this talk. In textile, of course, texture and textile, they come from the same Latin root, which means to weave. So it's no surprise that textiles have texture. As you can see, if we exclude all color information from this texture because of the type of the, you know, the weaving and knitting and, you know, the size of the threads that they have used to produce those textiles, we have different types of textures in textiles and textile fabrics. I want to kind of, I don't know how to say it, but kind of show you why understanding texture is important. So if you, let me just play this video for you. As you might know, e-shopping is a trend these days, and with the emerge of, you know, augmented reality and virtual reality, if we could find a way to reproduce the appearance in a way that if we look at these basically different types of, you know, clothing on this model, if we find it very close to what we see in the real life, it would be great. Then we need to find a way to kind of understand and quantify texture in order to reproduce it on the virtual world. In terms of human perception, our perception of texture, we have two types of texture, of course. If I ask you to please define texture for me, or just share your perception or your understanding of texture, what would you say?
Tactile perception.
Okay. this is probably the most kind of, you know, the first thing that comes to your mind when I ask about texture, because this is what we have learned, that texture is something that we can touch. But it's not just about that. Whatever we see, which is not, in my opinion, which is not perfect, purely color or gloss or other, you know, information about the object, it is texture. So it's a very broad term, and it's very complicated. It is not just what we can touch with our, you know, tactile sense. So we have two types of texture. Okay, after this very brief introduction, I want to talk about the experiments that we did in order to understand texture better here. So, of course, in order to understand better every appearance attribute, we need to ask for, you know, humans' judgment, humans' observation. So we did a psychophysical experiment. We had this nice texture database, which actually is they have used these textures to create a texture database, Hitexila, and they have all, you know, hyperspectral measurements of these textiles, the ones that you can see here in this slide. So we had them in the lab. So I thought that, okay, let's use this in order to do a psychophysical experiment to understand it, texture better. So what we did, we invited people to the lab and presented them with these textiles and asked them to define the appearance and in specific texture of these textiles as precisely as they could. So each experiment with each subject observer, it took about 5 hours. It was a very long experiment because we had 52 textiles. And of course, it's not an easy task. If I just ask you to define the texture of your t-shirts, you would understand that it's not easy at all. So it took a very long time, and we could only afford 5 people to just finish this experiment. So what we did, that we did this experiment in one of the rooms that we had, A013, probably you have been there, under indoor diffuse illumination. And viewing geometry was actually, and viewing an illumination geometry was something that we didn't fix. We let them to move and kind of touch and do whatever they want just to understand the appearance and texture of these textiles. And, of course, we captured their videos, we took notes, and we did kind of interview them. So we asked them very kind of, you know, exact questions of how do you perceive texture, what is your understanding, how do you define, can you discriminate between texture, color, and etc. In the second, I will talk about this, the second experiment, which is kind of the continuation of the first experiment. We did a rank ordering experiment. I will talk about this later. But let me, before getting into the results of this texture description experiment, let me talk about a couple of observations which were interesting for us. The first observation was that describing texture is not easy. It's a difficult task. So if you compare these two textiles, you would see that, for instance, in this one, there are some, you know, shapes and kind of patterns that are understandable. You would be able to say, I can see zigzags, I can see diamonds, something like snowflakes. So it was easier for them to define that. But when it came to more like natural textures, it was harder for them. Like, how would they be able to define the shape of a leaf, for instance? So something which is kind of very intuitive for us, and we understand and perceive it effortlessly. When it comes to talking about it, suddenly it becomes a huge, you know, complex problem. It was very interesting. So although we humans understand the texture very intuitively, probably we don't have enough words or limited, you know, terminology to talk about it. The other observation was that we naturally, as you said, we naturally tend to touch. So the first thing that they would do was to go for, you know, the textile and touching it in order to be able to understand it better. But when I ask them, do you really need to touch these, if I ask you to just, by looking at these textiles, talk about them, how would you feel? And they would say that we can do that. They could even tell if this textile is, for instance, soft or not, just by looking at it. So we already have kind of a rich, you know, bank of information about the appearance. Just by looking, and we can refer to that and use those information without even kind of touching the material. And the other observation was that our observer could discriminate between three types of texture. One type of texture was purely local variations in color. The other one was local variations in geometry or topography of the surface of the material. And the last one, which in my opinion was the most interesting one, was local variations in surface specularity or brightness. Something which probably, if we categorize these, we put these kind of perceptual attribute into the gloss category. But if there is local non-uniformity in gloss of the material, surface of the material, we could perceive this as texture. Okay. To summarize the results of this experiment, we could gather 160 different words, appearance-related words. 160. That's quite a lot. Just having 5 people and 52 textile materials. I will show you later on in the next slide what these words were, but just in order to do some, you know, statistical kind of analysis on this, different words. Out of 160, 65 words were purely texture related. I'm not right. So 40. I'm not very good at math. It's 65 plus 55 is 120. 120 were texture related words, which kind of accounted for 41% of the entire data bag of words actually. 34% were nouns, 41% were adjectives. Only 30 words were color-related, like, I don't know, blue, red, cyan, black, brown, whatever. And 10 words were related to gloss and translucency. So as you can see, 65 words plus 55, 120 out of 160, that's quite a lot. So texture is really there, and it needs to be kind of taken care of. In this slide, you can see a list of, I'm not quite sure how many, I think 25 texture-related words that we gathered, we collected in this experiment. Roughness, smoothness, softness, I don't know, uniformity, rectangularity, different words that you could not categorize them as color related or gloss related words. Out of these many words, we picked only 10 of the most frequently used ones in order to do more investigation. These 10 words were smooth, soft, homogeneous, geometric variation, random, repeating, regular, color variations, strong, and complicated. So the most frequently used one was smooth on this list. So in the second part of this work, okay, now we have some words which might be potentially some attributes of perceptual attributes of texture. In the next step, we were interested in quantifying them, of course. So the easiest straightforward way to do it is just do a rank ordering experiment. So what we did that we invited people again to the lab, and we asked them to rank these textiles with respect to how strongly they are correlated to, let's say, smoothness, from the least smooth to the most smooth. And we repeated this for all these 10 attributes. And as you know, the result of a rank ordering experiment is some rank orders for those samples that you can use as basically ratings of people, visual ratings of every attribute for those textiles. Before using those data for further analysis, we had to make sure that they are accurate in terms of observers' intra and inter variability. One of the metrics, statistical parameters that you can use in order to check for your observer variability is standardized residual sum of squares. It's very popular in color difference studies. So we use the same metric in order to understand our observer intra variability and inter observer variability. Do you know the difference between them? Okay. Yes, you define them correctly, but it's kind of the other way around. No, it's okay. So intra is comparing myself with myself. If I repeat the same experiment, how accurate I am. But inter-observer is comparing me with Peter's results, for instance. Or maybe I... Okay, yes. Then I'm sorry, I didn't. And it's very interesting, in psychophysical experiments, usually intra-observer error is always less or smaller than inter-observer error. So our inter-observer variability is not quite low, but it was okay, it was kind of acceptable. And as you can see here, the largest inter-observer variability belongs to repetitiveness and regularity, interestingly. So it means that it was harder for them to assess these two attributes. Or there was less agreement between them. So we trusted them, we trusted those results, and based on these results, we computed rank scores for each textile as the average of the rank scores of all observers. This is just to show you kind of showcasing the difference between these attributes in observers' opinions. For instance, if you take into account, let's say, complexity, as you can see, the complexity of this textile is being evaluated to be higher than this one, which to me makes sense. because this has a kind of a repetitive pattern. It's easy to understand. In terms of regularity, let's say, this one has less regularity rank than this one. So the results were quite kind of, they made sense at least. In the next step, we try to see if there is any correlation between these attributes. For instance, if there is any correlation between complexity of a texture and its homogeneity. And okay, we kind of look into the linear relationship between the visual rank scores of every like pair of attributes. And for instance, as you can see, complexity is strongly negatively related to homogeneity, which makes sense. Similarly, regularity is strongly negatively correlated with randomness, which makes sense again. There is a strong positive correlation between complexity and randomness. More random, more complicated. And unfortunately, we couldn't find a nice, let's say, relationship or meaningful correlation between complexity and repetitiveness. And it is probably because if you look at our data set, which I will show you later on, there are not many regular patterns in our database. So probably observers were not able to evaluate it properly. The most interesting finding in this correlation analysis was that softness as a one attribute, it didn't have any meaningful correlation with any of the other attributes, which if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because exactly, because it's mainly a tactile, you know, information, while the other ones are probably more visual. So in order to understand better kind of the relationship between all these, you know, data, we need a principal component analysis as well. So it was very interesting because the PCA result showed that we have, we have three main principal components, and it means that, okay, we had 10 attributes, but you can just, you know, explain them with only three dimensions or, you know, variables or principal components or whatever you want to name it. As you can see, the first principal component is highly positively correlated with homogeneity and strongly negatively related with complexity. The second principal component is highly strongly correlated with repetitiveness and regularity. So we are somehow, you know, kind of discriminating between different types of texture, perceptual attributes of texture. And the last component, principal component, is related to softness. So it's kind of really separated from the rest of the attributes. So the results of PCA indicate that we can actually, among these 10, we can pick complexity and homogeneity and consider them as one dimension of texture. So the idea is that we all know, probably, we are quite sure about that. Texture is a multidimensional attribute. You cannot describe texture with only one dimension, just like you cannot talk about color in only one dimension. Color has three dimensions. Gloss has at least five dimensions. So texture probably is most likely multidimensional. And we could probably identify it using this limited data set at least one or two dimensions of texture here. So this is the theory that texture is a multidimensional. This is kind of a pre-assumption And in this work, I can tell that we could identify one of its dimensions out of many n dimensions. And we call that visual texture complexity. At one of its ends or extremes, we have homogeneity, and at the opposite extreme, we had complexity. Okay. We have mentioned the term complexity here, and if you do a little bit of research, you would see that complexity is a well-known term, you know, like it's been around for a very long time in different applications, especially in neuroscience and cognitive science, when they want to kind of understand how our brain interprets and understands different stimuli. Complexity is one key to do that, complexity of the stimuli. And interestingly, I just read a proposal this morning. I don't know whose proposal was that. So it has actually been around in medical imaging as well, complexity, because the complexity of medical images makes them really hard to kind of, if you want to like do some segmentation to understand the bad tissues, damaged or malignant, you know, tissues from benign tissues when it comes to CAD diagnosis, computer-aided diagnosis of cancer, then the complexity of images is important. So this is one application, potential application. We need to find a way to kind of quantify complexity. If I ask you which... These are some medical images from some, you know, I think cancer. I'm not quite sure if they took these pictures using MRI. They don't seem to be MRI images. Probably optical microscope after injection of some purple dye in order to kind of understand, to distinguish like bad tissue from like good healthy tissue. But if I ask you which one is more complex, which one would you pick? This one, yes. Because there is no distinct border, you know, between. So, yes, it's very hard to do the segmentation on these type of images. Complexity of texture has been around for color science as well. As you might know, not all color stimuli are uniform color stimuli. Not all color patches are something like color checker, you know, patches with solid, uniform, matte colors, or like Munsell color patches. We have in the real world, we have non-uniform distribution of color. And therefore, now it's a very hot topic to be able to quantify this color complexity or spatio-chromatic complexity. Actually, they have this, CIE has this committee now, which they are working on it. So complexity has been around as a perceptual, visual mainly, component of appearance and texture. So, because in this work we could identify texture complexity as one of the dimensions of texture, we decided to see if we could quantify that, find a way to quantify. It's very easy to measure the color of a stimuli. You can take it to the lab, you can use a spectrophotometer or a spectroradiometer to measure the color. But if I ask you, how do you measure the texture of a stimuli? Do you know, is there any way, do you think, to do that? What is the most straightforward way to measure texture of a stimuli, whatever it would be?
3D scanning.
3D scanning. Image processing, like how? looking for patterns. Okay, how we can look for patterns?
Hyperspectral.
Hyperspectral imaging. Okay.
Okay. So I also know that with some specific, some samples, they use AFM or something like that, and they calculate the roughness of the surface.
This is kind of very much close to what your friend said about 3D scanning. This is actually one way to, of course, quantify texture when we are concerned about 3D topography, topographical texture, something we can actually feel when we touch a surface. But as I mentioned, not all textures are like that. So let's say we have a very smooth, perfectly smooth surface with non-uniformities, and we perceive that as texture. How would you be able to measure that?
Edge detection.
So all of you are talking about image processing and using images. So basically what we need to do is we have a physical, real, material surface. We have to take it to the lab. We have to use some imaging technique, be it a hyperspectral camera or an RGB camera. We take a picture of that texture, and then we can do edge detections or we can do other things too. So, yes, the most probably easiest, most straightforward way is to use imaging, because we don't have any instrument to be that is able to measure texture. Unless you do a BTF. Do you know what is BTF? Bidirectional texture function, BTF. So it's something we don't have time really to talk about it, but it is something very similar to BRDF, and it's basically an instrument, Gonio, a spectrophotometer that can measure, your material from different angles, and it's probably a very expensive computationally and timely expensive process. But image processing is the easiest. So, as I mentioned, one of the attributes that we look into in the lab was complexity. And this is the results of ranking of complexity of some of these textiles. From the least complicated, in observer's opinion, because these are ranked ranked based on the observer's rank scores. The least complicated one and the most complicated one here. Okay, I want to quantify complexity, so I need to understand it better. We decided to find the correlation, the linear correlation, because, when you want to kind of tackle an issue, it's always best to start from the less complicated kind of tools that you have. Linear relationship, in order to find better if these different attributes are correlated and how they are correlated. So we just look into the linear relationship between rank scores of complexity and other attributes, visual attributes. For instance, homogeneity. You can see a perfect linear, negative linear relationship. We also did multivariate regression in order to find, as I said, the relationship between complexity and other visual attributes of texture. So it's very easy. You just need to do this. You just need to do this generic formula and find the coefficients, which basically tell you how much, for instance, let's say, randomness is related to complexity. So after doing this analysis, this is the final result in terms of these coefficients. So as you can see, the coefficient for randomness is 0.5 here, which is the largest coefficient among all other this is color variation. The coefficient is 0.34. This one is strongness of texture. This one is regularity, and this one is repetitiveness. So if you manage to measure the regularity of a texture and put it in this formula together with the kind of, you know, the randomness of that texture and strongness and the rest, you are able to kind of predict its complexity. And according to this formula, it says that randomness is the most important or the most influential parameters in kind of the complexity of the texture. And unfortunately, as I said before, probably it's due to our limited database, but we couldn't find any meaningful relationship between regularity and repetitiveness and complexity. Okay, let's talk about image processing. So what I did was that, okay, I went to the lab, I took some RGB images using a digital camera of my textiles, and I used those images in order to extract some texture features. Because in, you know, texture analysis and texture classification, there are very, you know, well-developed ways of measuring the texture of images. So let's make the best of it for this application and see if those computational texture features are related to what my observers saw and evaluated in the lab. Probably the easiest ones are first-order image statistics. So you have RGB images or even hyperspectral images. It's no different. So in RGB image, you have three channels. In hyperspectral or multispectral, you have more channels. So you can kind of extend these to other imaging techniques as well. The most... The most popular, probably easiest image statistics to calculate are standard deviation, variance, skewness, kurtosis, and energy and entropy. So we calculated all these basically statistics for our images, our textile images. These are their formulas. And then... So let me tell you here that I used four different techniques in order to extract texture from my textile images. One were image statistics, or they call it in the literature color descriptors, because they can target each image channel separately, RGB. The next technique that I used was co-occurrence matrices and co-occurrence features. Do you know, are you familiar with this? Or, no.
Mm-hmm. Is it related to gradients?
To gradients, not exactly. Okay, so let me explain to you briefly. Co-occurrence, it means that two pixels occurring together at the same time, okay? So what we do in order to basically populate this matrix, and then if you can populate this matrix, you can calculate different features from this. So let's see how we can kind of build this matrix first, which they call co-occurrence matrix. So let's see, you have a pixel in your image, and you want to calculate its texture features. So it's very important to know the neighboring pixels, how they are, if they are lighter, they have more like pixel values, less pixel values. So we took a specific direction and kind of a specific distance. For instance, in this case, this is the central pixel for which I want to calculate COM. And these are the neighboring pixels with just one pixel distance. So this is called distance, which in this case is 1, because I'm going towards the next pixel with only 1 pixel difference. And these directions are called orientation angle. So this is the 0 orientation, this is 45, and up to 315. So basically you take a pixel and you move around this pixel to understand how the neighbors are kind of, you know, distributed with respect to this. So in this case, my pixel has a pixel value of 7. And by the way, you know that the range RGB images, the pixel values are all usually within the range 0 and 255. But in order to reduce the computational complexity, they usually quantize these. So as you can see, the max here is 8. So they reduce the range to 0 and 8 instead, just to kind of reduce the computational cost. So let's take a look at one kind of pair of pixels, this one, 7 and 4. We come to this table, which starts from 1 on vertical direction to 8, and 1 to 8 in horizontal direction. How many times we have the kind of a pair of 7 and 4 next to it in the entire image? We do this counting, and then we understand that it has happened twice, once here and once here. So we come to this table, we find the pair 7 and 4, 7 here, 4 here, and we see that it has happened twice. So we put a 2 in this matrix. And in a very similar way, we populate this matrix. So it tells us the probability of occurrence of every pair of pixel values together. And once we have this, we can calculate different, let's say, texture features, which they would call sometimes GLCM texture features, gray level co-occurrence matrix, or simply COM texture features. So we have energy, we have contrast, homogeneity, correlation, and entropy. And each of these, they tell us about different, you know, properties of our image. And they usually use them as texture features. Another way of quantifying or a texture of an image is filtering, using filters. The most popular one, the most effective one, is Gabor filtering. So its mathematics is a little bit complicated. Gabor filters are basically the convolution of sinusoids and Gaussian kernels. And it's their formula. So in this formula, you have to specify mainly, it has, you know, many parameters. But the most important ones are frequency of Gabor filters and orientation angle. And what are they? These are frequency and orientation. So special frequency tells us about the size of how, like, largely these filters can cover our image and scan over the image. And orientation is the direction of each filter. So as you can see, obviously we cannot use just one filter because it doesn't give us everything that we need. So Gabor filters are usually a bank of filters. We would call them a bank of filters, from smallest frequency and orientation up to the largest one. If we want to show you how they operate on our images, this is, I think, one nice example to show you how they work. So this is an image texture, and we want to kind of discriminate between all vertical patterns with those which are oblique and horizontal. So if we use a bank of vertical Gabor filters and we kind of multiply this by our image, it is able to kind of discriminate and isolate all these vertical patterns in the image. So it works very nicely. This way you can kind of separate different patterns in your image. And after that, you use the mean of variance of the filtered image as Gabor texture features. And finally, the most popular texture features, which I used, the fourth one, is local binary patterns. In essence, they are kind of similar to COMs, co-occurrence matrices, because they, again, look at the relationship between your pixels and the neighboring pixels. But they are kind of simpler. The kind of the idea behind them is very, I would say, very nice, very easy, and they are very actually useful and practical. So what happens this time is that, okay, this is your pixel. You want to understand what happens around it. So you take a circle with a radius of 1 pixel, 2 pixel, or whatever you want. In this example, it's just 1 pixel difference, the radius. And you move around your central pixel, and you look at the pixel values of a neighboring pixel. If it has a pixel value less than your central pixel, you would assign a value of 1 to it. And if it's darker than your central pixel, you will assign a value of 0 to it. So depending on how many points you have basically chosen to look into, you would have a kind of a binary code for each pixel. And you can simply turn this binary code to a decimal code, and you can store them as a histogram. So the possibility of, you know, how these neighboring pixels are with respect to these central pixel are huge. So you have 2 to the power of the number of the points, in this case, 8 possible patterns, local binary patterns. And it's very interesting that among all these many possible patterns that you can create, only 9 of them are actually useful. The rest of them are, they don't give you any meaningful information about the texture. These 9 patterns are called uniform local binary patterns. As you can see, all of them are, basically you can see some form of regularity in them. In this case, all of them are basically zeros with respect to the central pixel. In this case, all of them are ones, or all the zeros are on one side and ones are on the other side, and there is a kind of a meaningful behavior here. These 9s are called uniform patterns. The rest are called non-uniform patterns. So what they do is that we create a histogram of the number, the frequency of these patterns. For instance, in this example, for this textile, the frequency or how many times the pattern number 1 has occurred is this many, about 5. And so on for the rest of these 9 uniform, and the frequency of all those non-uniform ones, which are not shown here, is about 6 point something. So we create this histogram, and then we use these as LBP, or local binary pattern texture features, these frequencies. So let me jump onto the results, because I don't know how much time is left.
Usually we have a break, but
if we want to have a break, not so many. I just need to present the results, and let me.
Perhaps it's more convenient just to.
Yeah, that's almost done. I just need to show them the results of this.
Okay. So.
What do you want?
I think we go ahead, and then we are earlier done.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go.
Okay, so I took my images. To summarize, I took my images, I computed 4 types of texture features for them, and now I want to see if there is any relationship between my observer rank scores and these features. So first class of texture features were image statistics, mean, variance, skewness, kurtosis, and energy and entropy. By the way, all these, you know, statistics, they can be easily computed using image processing MATLAB toolbox, nothing major. So as you can see, these are the correlation coefficients in this bar graph. I have shown you the linear correlation coefficients between, let's say, mu, for instance, and the visual data. And the scatter plots are shown here, the visual data of texture complexity against these features. As you can see, mu is showing a very bad, poor performance. Doesn't have any relationship with texture, perceived texture, or perceived complexity. On the other hand, variance, suddenly it's showing a great, strong relationship. For skewness and kurtosis, do you know what skewness and kurtosis are? Like, for, I think mu and variance are very kind of, you know them. The definition is not that difficult, but... Exactly, exactly. So these two also, they are, show very poor performance. Energy and entropy are doing better. So the best ones that we could potentially use as a quantitative measure metric for complexity of texture is variance and entropy, according to this reason. This correlation analysis. What I did was I repeated the same analysis in other color spaces other than RGB. So these results are basically for the RGB images. It's very, there are very like simple transformation matrices in order to transform your images from RGB space to other color spaces, for instance, HSV or YCBCR or CLAP, whatever you want. So I transformed my images to other color spaces and did the same correlation analysis. As you can see, okay, let me ask you, what do you see in this bar graph? What is the most kind of striking or, sorry, prominent observation?
The lightness has, like intensity, the lightness has the most correlation with the first
element. Exactly, exactly. So this is kind of the outcome of this experiment. No matter in which color space you work, the intensity information or the luminance information of your images, they have the highest correlation with the visual data, which was very interesting finding. Also, another observation is that if you take into account any color space, for instance, let's talk about CLAP here, the correlation obtained for CIEB star is higher than A star. Or in this case, YCBCR, CB gives better correlations as compared to CR. So one color channel always performs better than the other color channel. What do you think the reason behind this could be? Even if you look at RGB, as you can see, okay, this is the intensity, grayscale.
Related to lambda and our sensitivity towards, like, you know, the B lambda.
Yes, okay.
Like, I think that kind of plays a role.
Not exactly, no. Any idea? What is a kind of... in common between these color spaces in terms of the behavior of each color channel. Just if you forget about VHS, because it's in a sense is very different from other color spaces. It tells us about saturation and hue. So let's forget about that. But these other color spaces, they can very beautifully separate luminance information from red, green, and blue, yellow. So does that give you any hint? In this voice CBCR, CB is blue, yellow, right? And it has higher correlation. In C-Lab, B star, again, blue, yellow, it has higher correlation. In this one as well, I2 is very close to blue, yellow color. Ringing any bell? So let me tell you, it is mainly due to the main color characteristics of this data set, simply. Because if you take a look at the color of my samples, they are mainly blue, green. There are not many red color samples, and this is exactly the reason why. So it gives us kind of this very important information that if you want to design an experiment, don't try to have a very broad range of attributes, be it color, texture, or whatever. Otherwise, you will see these kind of outcomes. But whatever Mitra mentioned is very important, because the intensity or luminance information of images, they are showing very high correlations. Okay, let's jump into the other texture feature class, COM features. So as I mentioned, we had five COM features, and energy, contrast, correlation, homogeneity, and entropy. And as you can see, some of them has negative relationship, some of them has positive, but the kind of the better and the strongest correlation belongs to entropy, probably. And inverse relationship with homogeneity, which was kind of expected. For other color spaces, similar results, similar finding. Again, intensity channels. They are performing really well. And Gabor, mean and standard deviation or variance. As you can see, mu or mean has a very poor relationship. On the other hand, Gabor standard variation has the highest correlations. And this applies to all color spaces. And finally, local binary pattern features. Generally, if you look at the correlation coefficient, you would see that even the best ones, the highest ones, are lower than what we had for other features. So unfortunately, local binary patterns, even though they are very popular, they are very loved in texture classification tasks, they didn't work in this in this study in terms of their relationship between the perceived texture. And to summarize the results, and let's talk about the main points of this kind of study. These are the summary of all, Okay, let's look at this one, because that one is not very informative. But if we compare all these five families of texture features and their relationship between visual texture complexity, you would see that probably the highest correlations always belong to intensity channels and the simple standard deviation. So it means that you don't really need to go for very, you know, sophisticated texture feature computation. If you just take the standard deviation of your images, it gives you enough information about its texture and texture complexity. Another finding, as I mentioned, is that, and these are, by the way, just for the intensity channels. And, okay, let's get back to this slide, because there are two points here which I want to emphasize on. As I said, there are poor relationships between, and I want to ask you the reason for this, by the way. Why the intensity channels of the images, they perform better than color channels? Why do you think it happened?
High difference in intensity, so that's why like it has like it plays like main role for us to identify the texture compared to the colors. So I hope that answered.
Yes, it was, yes, actually it was accurate and it was very close. Any other idea? Do you know how? Do you possibly know how our visual system perceives color? Because we know color has three dimensions. We have lightness, we have chroma, and we have saturation. We have a value. We have, was I right? Hue, exactly. We have lightness, we have hue, and we have a saturation. Do you know about the fact that our visual system also separates lightness information from color information, and these two types of information are processed in our brain separately? So I think if we just consider the existing theory of, you know, color vision, these results also make a lot of sense, because what happens in our brain is that the color information is separated from lightness information. And fortunately, lightness information gives good enough information about texture. So color can probably enrich this information, just add some, you know, more information to lightness, but lightness seems to be good enough. And it was a very interesting finding, because being able to kind of confirm some, you know, very well-known theory in the lab, for me it was kind of a good achievement, because this was a very difficult task. You know, like this, the experiment and the psychophysical experiment, it wasn't easy. And it was very interesting that we didn't define texture for our observer, nothing. They just came into the lab. We didn't give them any information about what texture is, and they did this kind of, you know, evaluation for us. And given that they had no info, and these results came out from those experiments, it was very, I'm really actually happy about it. So the output of this research is that humans take into account luminance contrast as texture, as something as texture. And the complexity is, the more random this luminance contrast is, the more complicated that texture would be. Okay, if we want to see the role of each of these four, which one is more correlated with the visual data, we did another multivariable regression analysis to find a joint, basically, correlation of these with respect to the visual data. As you can see, as I mentioned, global sigma, or this kind of the simple standard variation of the images, it has the highest coefficient. And then it's Gabor sigma, again, another standard variation. And then comes entropy, COM entropy. And finally, it comes LBP, uniform LBPs. So standard variation is the key here. And if you want to compare color spaces, in which color space is better to kind of do these kind of experiments, according to the results of this work, which is limited, as I have to emphasize on this again, it's limited to this database, to some few, you know, observers, but it seems that sRGB, YCBCR, and HSV, they gave the best results. And CLAB, unfortunately, I have to say, it didn't perform really well. If we take into account more complex texture features, if we just take a look at Sigma, you can see that CLAB is performing as good as the others, probably even better. But for other texture features, it doesn't work very nicely. This is one outcome that you need to kind of make sure that you are working in a right color space for this kind of analysis, because these data are very dependent on the way that the basically pixel values are calculated, and therefore its direct effect on the texture features computation. Oh yes, and yeah, thank you very much for your attention and your time. Not yet.
Because like neural networks pay very much attention to textures, and they can kind of take a look inside.
Yes.
What stimulus some neurons fire on, and like you can quantify texture as well by reducing some neural net, so that's very promising.
Yeah, that's a good idea actually, but one of the problems is that. That's all. Yeah, you can always find a way to augment the data, but for these kind of tasks, it's always kind of better to have like more original data, because augmentation kind of, you know, extends the same data set. But these data, which are dependent on the opinions of people, it's always better to use more people as possible. But that's one idea for extending this work. Any other? Yes?
Yeah, I wanted to know, because I'm a bit confused.
Yeah.
The strongness you define, is it that type of visual?
No, these are okay, let's get back to this slide. Here. As you can see, I mentioned that we had 10. That was a very good question, actually. I had to mention this before. We had 10 attributes, but here you can see only how many? 7, right? 6 plus complexity. So I just took those which were purely visual. I excluded all those, you know, tactile attributes of texture. So strongness here is visual, actually.
Now what about soft?
Softness is not here. Softness is tactile. Let's get back to this PCA analysis. See, softness is related to the third principal component.
But strongness in this condition, is it not also tactile?
In this work, in this specific work, no. It's purely visual. When you look at a texture and you see it as something quite coming out quite strong. But that was a good question. Thank you. Even here in this kind of, let's say, the principal component space, you would see that softness stands quite far away from the rest of the attributes. And geometric variation. One other kind of info that I forgot to mention is that when we were doing the experiment, during the interview, we would ask them actually that, okay, softness is a tactile attribute of texture or visual. So in this way, we kind of took those attributes which were evaluated purely, merely visually for the text, for the complexity, visual texture complexity. So that I forgot to mention that. In this sense, geometric variation is also, could be tactile. We didn't use that. And also smoothness. We excluded that too because it could be tactile too. Any input kind of to improve this work? Yes. Yes. Right? Yes.
And then you digitized.
Yes.
Textiles,
yes.
Using camera.
Yes.
To obtain digital data.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Right. In terms of image processing, if you would apply a kind of a sharpening.
Okay.
To all the images. A blurring.
Oh, okay, blurring, okay.
Yeah. So, to which extent would that affect?
That's a very good point, because, of course, the quality of the images, yeah, it affects, you know, the feature.
Of course, you
yes.
You take a sharpened image with a DSLR and the,
yeah,
but just, you know, for making this up, if you would mm-hmm. apply a kind of a non-sharp masking tool to all the images, and then you would run the different filters, bubble filters and some other
yes.
filters, the one you showed, and then you would apply a smoothness or a blurring filter.
And then...
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
You know, when it would,
well, I haven't done that test, but... I'm expecting that there must be a significant difference. I'm expecting a kind of a meaningful, like significant difference between these two, because it's very sensitive to like the pixel values and their distribution. So, yes. Maybe it doesn't impact kind of, you know, the simple image statistics like standard variation much. But in terms of like entropy, GLCM, and Gabor features, and of course LBP, it will be very important too. It will affect. Okay. Yes. 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 Yeah. That was a very nice idea. Just because I have been getting this comment so many times that okay, if what happens if you use like digital samples for the psychophysical experiment mm-hmm. instead of physical ones, just use images and ask people to kind of, you know, evaluate and rank them and whatever on a screen. So this is one possible. I haven't done that, but that was a very good comment, I would say. So yes, I don't know. I'm not expecting if the results are accurate enough. I'm not expecting a huge difference, to be honest, between these two types of experiment, like using physical samples and images. That would be interesting to see. So we could work on that.
I had a question. While conducting the psychophysical experiment,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How did like touching the samples affect their judgment of texture? Because like there are cases where you look at something and it looks very soft, then you touch it and then you have a different perception of the texture. Did you see that, and like was it traceable? Because that kind of affects the data.
I know what you mean, I hear you, but we kind of assume that it doesn't. Because basically it was very important for us to understand this, because we did this experiment in a completely, like, in complete freedom. Like, we didn't limit them, just to let them touch the samples, because we wanted to kind of see if there is any impact of tactile information into the on the visual information. And in my observation, there was none. There was not a significant impact on tactile information, because as I said, our memory and our kind of previous information is rich enough that even if you don't let people to touch texture, they would be able, just by looking at it, they could evaluate all those, you know, tactile properties. Like, they would see if this is soft or not. So it was one of the observations. And when we asked them, do you need to touch, as I said before, do you need to touch in order to be able to talk about its softness and smoothness, they would say no. Even by looking at it, we know that, for instance, fur is soft. We don't need to, or velvet is soft. So we kind of assume that there is a very distinct kind of separation between visual texture information and tactile texture information. This was the pre-assumption of this work. That's why we excluded like three attributes and just worked on the remaining as visual attributes.
That the reason why you used textile, because it was most convenient?
It was, yes.
Instead of adding a kind of natural objects,
yes,
like
wood and exactly. Just to simplify this. Because people are familiar with textile, in my opinion. They have a kind of a good understanding, because we wear clothes, like, and we are very well familiar with textiles. But yeah, it was just, as I said, it was just kind of a very, you know, what is the best word to explain this kind of works? It's very fundamental, like very, very basic. You can extend this kind of works to a great extent, adding more types of textures, just do everything that you can. But No. Those techniques are quite well developed, I would say. The missing point here is the relationship between how we see texture and those metrics or measurements, and even the classification. There are very nice, you know, algorithms for and metrics for texture classification, segmentation, and stuff, but no one has really looked into if the results of those classification are related very well with how we human observer would see. So this is the missing point here. The perceptual texture is a big challenge, I would say. The image processing has made provisions for quantified texture very well. These were only five texture features that I mentioned. There are a huge the number of, you know, different techniques for quantifying texture. So it's well developed. The missing point is the perceptual aspect of it.
And it's very interesting. I just was thinking, where is the threshold, you know, where you talk purely about color, and when do you start to talk about
Yes.
I just try to imagine, you know, like a color patch, very uniform, and then you apply a kind of a texture, and you still talk about color, but then at a certain threshold, probably you don't talk about the color, then you talk about the texture only.
Yes, this is this problem.
And where is this threshold? And again, it's probably, it's about
was
contrast.
Exactly. It's where was it? It was here, I guess. This is the issue that people are trying to deal with. This one, the spatio-chromatic complexity. It's a kind of a thing now. Because okay, let me ask you. These are some color fractals. They call them color fractals. If I ask you which one is the most complicated one, which one would you pick? This one? Okay. Yes, that's true. So this is color, this is color, but at the same time it's texture, and measuring this is a real challenge, because if you want to measure the color of this, what is the color of this patch? So you have to find a way to measure its texture. So this topic is very interesting. At the same time, it's very complex, because texture is, as I said before, texture is even related to brightness non-uniformity. So these two samples are uniform in terms of their color. This one is black, this one is pure brown, but they have non-uniformities in their highlight and the highlights. And people actually would call this texture. So, yes.
Not talking about texture difference.
I think it's too soon to
still call it difference.
But yes.
I mean, there we have a kind of a grasp of what it is and formula and attributes, but when it comes to texture, then we need
yes.
to understand.
Exactly.
The kind of different attributes before we can go on and talk about the difference or use some objective
yes.
difference formulas.
That's true. I think there is still a long way to go to get that to that
but
point.
But that's good for the students. So you see, there is still a huge potential to do some research and explore. And so, any other questions? Otherwise, we close the morning session. And thanks to Fereshteyn.
My pleasure.
And I assume. Students are welcome to contact
of course,
you to
yes, they
ask
are.
Your questions or,
of course.
Okay, then once more, thanks again, and we meet again 1:15. Good, thanks.
Going back to your office? Or you want
to
have a meeting?
A quick meeting. Yeah.
Okay.
You come to my office quickly? Okay, good.
lesson in my last video, how to make a realistic looking skin shader in Blender. I am not a pro in this, but I can show you my techniques. I am going to show the shader setup only in this video, not the texture. Maybe I covered it in the future videos. For this, I am going to use my LD one from my past art. First, I will start from the eye shader. The eye exists in two spheres. One is brightness and the second.